we were to take Hinduism as a whole, it's vast literature, it's complicated rituals, it's sprawling folkways, it's opulent art, and compress it into a single affirmation. We would find it saying, you can have what you want. This sounds promising, but it throws the problem back in our laps. For what do we want? It is easy to give a simple answer, not easy to give a good one. India has lived with this question for ages and has her answer waiting. People, she says, want four things. They begin by wanting pleasure. If pleasure is what you want, do not suppress this desire. Seek it intelligently, so she says. But even playboys, a type seldom credited with profundity, have been known to conclude, as one did recently, that the glamour of yesterday I have come to see as tinsel. Sooner or later, everyone wants to experience more than a kaleidoscope of momentary pleasures, however delectable. When this time comes, the individual's interests usually shift to the second major goal of life, which is worldly success, wealth, fame, and power. This too is a worthy goal, to be neither scorned nor contemned. Moreover, its satisfaction lasts long, for unlike pleasure, success is a social achievement, and as such, it involves the lives of others. For this reason, it commands a scope and importance that pleasure cannot boast. India acknowledges that drives for power, position, and possessions run deep, nor should they be disparaged per se. A modicum of worldly success is indispensable for supporting a household and discharging civic duties responsibly. Beyond this minimum, worldly achievements confer dignity and self-respect. In the end, however, these rewards do have their term. For these are not the things people really want, and people can never get enough of what they do not really want. In Hindu idiom, to try to extinguish the drive for riches with money is like trying to quench a fire by pouring butter over it. Neither fortune nor station can obscure the realization that one lacks so much else. In the end, everyone wants more from life than a country home, a sports car, a posh vacations. The final reason why worldly success cannot satisfy us completely is that its achievements are ephemeral. Wealth, fame, and power do not survive bodily death. You can't take it with you, as we routinely say. Hindus locate pleasure and success on the path of desire. The guiding principle is not to turn from desire until desire turns from you, for Hinduism regards the objects of the path of desire as if they were toys. If we ask ourselves whether there is anything wrong with toys, our answer must be, on the contrary. The thought of children without them is sad. Even sadder, however, is the prospect of adults who fail to develop interests more significant than dolls and trains. By the same token, individuals whose development is not arrested will move through delighting in success and the senses to the point where their attractions have been largely outgrown. But what greater attractions does life afford? Two, say the Hindus, in contrast with the path of desire that constitute the path of renunciation. We must never forget that Hinduism's path of renunciation comes after the path of desire. If people could be satisfied by following their impulses, the thought of renunciation would never arise. What forces us to listen attentively to Hinduism's hypothesis is the testimony of those who stride the path of desire famously and still find themselves wishing for more than it offers. These people, not the ones who renounce, but the ones who see nothing to renounce for, are the world's real pessimists. Throughout, each attainment seems to fan the flames of new desire. None satisfies fully, and all, it becomes evident, perish with time. Eventually, there comes over them the suspicion that they are caught on a treadmill, having to run faster and faster for rewards that mean less and less. When that suspicion dawns and they find themselves crying, vanity, vanity, all is vanity, it may occur to them that the problem stems from the smallness of the self they have been scrambling to serve. What if the focus of their concern were shifted? Might not becoming a part of a larger, more significant whole relieve life of its triviality? That question answers the birth of religion. For though in some watered down sense there may be a religion of self-worship, true religion begins with the quest for meaning and value beyond self-centeredness. It renounces the ego's claims to finality. This is the moment Hinduism has been waiting for. As long as people are content with the prospect of pleasure, success, or service, the Hindu sage will not be likely to disturb them beyond offering some suggestions as to how to proceed more effectively. The critical point in life comes when these things lose their original charm and one finds oneself wishing that the life had something more to offer. Whether life does or does not hold more is probably the question that divides people more sharply than any other. Pleasure, success, and duty are never humanity's ultimate goals. At best, they are means that we assume will take us in the direction of what we really want. What we really want are things that lie at a deeper level. To state the full truth, then, we must say that what people would really like to have is infinite being, infinite knowledge, and infinite bliss. They might have to settle for less, but this is what they really want. Together, the wants into a single word, what people really want is liberation, moksha. Release from the finitude that restricts us from the limitless being, consciousness, and bliss our hearts desire. Pleasure, success, responsible discharge of duty and liberation. We have completed the circuit of what people think they want and what they want in actuality. This takes us back to the staggering conclusion with which our survey of Hinduism began. What people most want, what they can have. Infinite being, infinite awareness, and infinite bliss are within their reach. Even so, the most startling statement yet awaits. Not only are these goods within people's reach, says Hinduism, people already possess them. Underlying the human self and animating it as a reservoir of being that never dies, is never exhausted, and is unrestricted in consciousness and bliss. This infinite center of every life, this hidden self or Atman, is no less than Brahman, the Godhead. Body, personality, and Atman Brahman. A human self is not completely accounted for until all three are noted.